Education, Senator Saksuk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As you say, Senate File 2712 is what we're presenting. I have an A1 amendment that I'd like to have moved to get the bill in the shape that we desire.
3, 4, 5.
The A1 amendment.
7, 8. How many do we need?
We're good. We need 8 and we have 8.
Okay, yeah, I was hesitating. Yeah. I wanted to see if we had a quorum, and apparently we do. So, Senator Carlson, we'll move the A1, and we're going to incorporate, there's a little one too, A2 as one amendment to get the bill in the shape that the author would like. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Saksuk on the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 2712 is a bill that will make modifications to how a person is able to sell and install a used, single-wide manufactured home. With me today are Mark Bruner from the Minnesota Manufactured Housing Association and Tom Jochum from the Department of Labor and Industry. And they're going to give some brief testimony and help answer any questions. As you said, Mr. Chair, we have the A2 amendment that you had put on there, too, and then that will pick up a repealer that the department needs to create a new notice of compliance. So these two gentlemen will deal with both of those amendments. Thank you.
Okay. Welcome to the committee.
My name is Mark Bruner. I'm with the Minnesota Manufactured Housing Association, and first I'd like to thank Senator Saksuk for your work on this bill, as well as Assistant Commissioner Joachim and the department. The industry has been working with the department and the Senator Saksuk and other members on this issue since about last August, and it's an attempt to essentially allow a manufactured home that's a used single section home to be, when it's sold and reinstalled, to be reinstalled on a frost-free foundation system if the home had originally been required to have been installed on a frost-free foundation system when it was first purchased. And that requirement initially would have been either the manufacturer's installation manual or would have been a federal requirement that the home initially be installed on a frost-free foundation system. And the one of the reasons for the change is that it's simply economics. What has transpired is, for example, a single-section manufactured home that might have a value of $15,000. The homeowner wants to sell the home. Perhaps they want to buy a new manufactured home, or they're moving to a site-built home. The purchaser interested in buying the home has to relocate it. And under the current Minnesota requirements, the home, if it originally had to have this frost-free foundation, would have to have it when it's relocated, which would run about $8,000 for this single-section home, which essentially leaves the homeowner in the position of either having to lose $8,000 in equity, ending up with no equity in the home, or the purchaser would have to pay the $8,000 for the frost-free foundation system. And what's typically the result there is the bank will not finance the home, especially if it's going into a manufactured home park or community, because the concrete going in the ground isn't, it's in somebody else's land. It's not, you know, part of the home. So it creates financing issues. And what we've been able to work out with the department is a requirement that if the purchaser elects to have the home reinstalled on a non-frost-free foundation, that it would then comply with the provision already in the state building code for manufactured homes that are installed on an above-the-law frost-line foundation system. The bill puts in place a rather substantial disclosure requirement so that the purchaser of the home is fully informed, and the seller and the purchaser both have to acknowledge that the home was originally installed on a frost-free foundation. They're electing not to reinstall it on a frost-free foundation, and there's suggestions, recommendations that they have the home checked for releveling needs things like that throughout the life of the home, as well as to ensure that there would be no existing warranties in place on the home that would be affected by being on a non-frost protected foundation system. So we've
spelled out the waiver or the warranty thing on page 6 on the bottom, that you have to sign that purchasers where you're aware of that. So you won't be liable if, or the seller won't be liable, I guess.
Well, it would be Mr. Chairman, so that the seller as well as the purchaser would be fully informed.
Know what's going on. That's on page 6 of the A1 amendment. Okay. Anything else we should know about that? Mr. Joe Akam, did you work on this or look at it? And is it all right, in your opinion?
Mr. Chair and committee members, as Mr. Bruner had indicated, we've been working with the Manufactured Housing Association along with Senator Saxhog and Representative Murdoch to tweak the language to get it in a format that works for us along with works for the industry and how we will present this and how the consent form will work for everyone. So we believe this puts it in a format that should inform the purchaser that here's what you're purchasing and here's what you're agreeing to, and that you are responsible from then on if there is any re-leveling that has to be done.
State your name for the record.
Oh, sorry, my name for the record, Tom Joachim, Assistant Commissioner, Labor and Industry.
Ed, sounds good. I had some concerns expressed about the realtors. Is this amendment or any of this take care of their concerns, or did they talk to you, Senator, or does anybody know?
I'll let Mr. Bruner. Yes, they did, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, we did meet with the realtors ahead of the hearing, and we've their concerns have been alleviated. They do have one suggested change that we would look at perhaps down the road that they didn't feel needed addressing today, just in terms of terminology that was used in current statute regarding the how you execute a purchase agreement versus transferring ownership.
I see the lady from is it Christine Berger? Are you? Instead of nodding your head, you might say into the microphone that we can't hear that on the microphone.
Thank you. Hi.
That you agree with.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Christine Berger. I'm with the Minnesota Association of Realtors. When we originally read the bill, we were a little bit alarmed because it's a lot different from...
But you're not alarmed now?
We think we're not alarmed. We think that this is duplicative of already some of what's in statute for the disclosure requirements. Some of it's new about the frost-free stuff. That's fine. It was more of the other disclosure notice that we were concerned about. So, but we think that's already in state statute, and so we think we're okay with it.
So usually, we want to do more than think that something's there, but if need, we'll have to tweak it on the floor or something, like, I guess. But it's all right, though, basically.
We think so. Thank you.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for being a little late and hope this hasn't already been covered. But has anybody talked about what kind of additional cost this puts on for the home purchaser? I mean, they're going to have a frost-free footing now, so there will be additional cost to that. Has anybody talked about that at all? I don't know who would be
best to answer. Chair,
it would be a lot less than if they didn't sign a waiver and had to build a foundation for $8,000. Is that right?
Right. So, Mr. Chair, Senator Skoy, it's kind of an affordable housing bill that we're talking about here. Is that, in essence, as Mr. Bruner said, that you have, let's say, a manufactured home worth $12,000, and you can have $8,000 in a frost. So that's why we're making it possible to sign a waiver.
Very good.
Actually, it relieves them of a higher standard. If they sign the thing, and you know what you're doing, so you sign it, and that should be all right.
Very good.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator?
I'm just wondering, what is the risk if you don't have that frost fee? I don't want to cause any trouble for the bill. I'm fine with it. I assume you wouldn't be doing it if there were any risk or danger anyway, but maybe you can
Sir.
What's the...
Mr. Bruner, go ahead. Yeah.
The language we've been working with the department on was to allow even multi-section homes to be reinstalled on a non-frost-free foundation. We narrowed it down so it's just the one section, so that and have agreed that if it's a multi-section home and you're bringing two sections together, there would need to be the additional support between the two. Okay. One of the things that the provision that is in the bill now does notify the buyer that they should check for releveling needs. The current requirement for an above frost-free foundation system would be that it would have to be the supports would have to be proper distances under the home, and if there were any type of adjusting or shifting in a winter, that could be releveled then the following spring.
Thank you.
Okay. Further suggestions or thoughts or motions?
Mr. Chairman, can we move the amendment?
Senator Carlson moved the amendment earlier. Is that correct? Yeah. I think the amendment's on, so we're ready for the progress of the bill as amended.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Carlson, before that, did you have a question?
Yes. Mr. Chair and Senator, are these manufactured homes built to different specifications? For instance, underside insulation, things like that. Or is it just a matter of stiffness that is different between the ones that are designed for frost-free foundation and the ones that are not?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carlson, I let Mr. Bruner.
The homes are built to a federal building code. When they're new, the requirement is they have to comply. There was a change that took effect in 2009. That any single or any manufactured home now, the manufacturing instructions originally require that it be on a frost-free foundation. The lenders are comfortable with that in terms of the financing for the new homes. The federal code does specifically say this applies to the initial owner, the first-time purchaser of the home. So what the what the bill does is allow a subsequent owner of the home, if they elect to, when it's being reinstalled, to install it to an above the frost line foundation, an above the frost line foundation, on the home site. The single section homes are different in the sense that there's a steel frame that runs under the home that the home sits on. The homes are still required to be anchored to the state requirements for wind needs, and what they call the skirting that goes under the home, it still has to be vented for proper ventilation and airflow underneath the home. So it really just puts in place another option, if you will, for a buyer in terms of how they reinstall the home. And if there were to be any shifting due to frost, the home can be easily re-leveled and that can be adjusted. So it isn't something that's forever an issue.
Mm-hmm. And it's done in the brightness of day. I mean, it's a full foreclosure and big type and buyer.
Yes.
Disclosure. What did I say, foreclosure?
Yes.
Oh, it could be foreclosure. Well, foreclosure's been being used so much lately that disclosure that everybody's aware of what's going on here. So that's Senator Carlson.
Yeah, and I guess the concern I that set in my mind is that the home may be subject to adverse effects from frost heave, and does that affect the person's financing? That if they put it on the frost-free, or the, non-frost-free, then is that home potentially subjected to damage from the frost heaves, and then does that affect their ability to get financing?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, well, on the issue of, could there be frost heave, if there were, one of the things we've done in the on the disclosure requirement or notice requirement is the seal that is on the back of the home, for example, will indicate these homes have to be installed by a licensed installers are licensed by the department, so that a prospective buyer looking at the home would know that it's on an above frost line foundation. They would then have the home checked to see if there were any issues with if there had been frost heave that the existing homeowner hadn't taken care of, then they would certainly want to consider, will this impact the financing of the home if there's some damage or frost heave. But the home originally would have been installed on a frost-free foundation when it was new. So if the person looking at the home today sees that it's on a frost-free foundation, there would have been those kinds of disclosure requirements all along, and perhaps the owner of the current home on a non-frost-free foundation would have done that because when they were originally purchasing the home, they weren't able to put the $8,000 under the home at that time. So in other words, the home would have been relocated when it ended up on this frost-free foundation. And the reason probably would have been because it was this $12,000 or $15,000 home that they couldn't afford. Whether or not a lender would not finance it at that time, there's no hard and fast rule that they wouldn't. But one of the things we do know is that it's problematic to get the financing on the $12,000 home with the $8,000 foundation. So that's, again, perhaps why the home that you're talking about isn't on that foundation system that the prospective buyer's looking at.
Okay, Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I was going to move that Senate File 2712 as amended be recommended to pass. Does it have to go anyplace else?
We haven't heard anything.
Mr. Chair, we've received no notice for any other policy committee, so we just, because it generates revenue, we think it should go to finance.
Finance. Referred.
Okay. On the Scheid motion to move Senate File 2712 as amended to the Finance Committee, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Thank you very much,
Mr. Chair, members.
Senator Murphy, I was going to say this is your re-election bill, but you're not running, so I guess.
No, this is, Mr.
This
Chairman.
Is your major piece of
legacy.
Legacy.
Yeah, this
legacy.
Is my legacy bill,
legacy,
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. This is Senate File 2726, Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, with me today is Mr. Amato from, he's a chief boiler inspector in the state of Minnesota. What this bill is it's basically a recodification of boiler code. If you read through the bill, make sure you're not tired before you start reading, because instructions on boilers and boiler code is pretty boring. This is a recodification. The one change that I could probably point to that might be a little bit more than just a recod is that very first section. But it just clarifies what the language is. And Mr. Chairman, when you're reading that, don't worry too much because the charter boat, that's a for-hire vessel. So your yacht, you don't need.
My yacht?
Yeah, it won't fall under this chapter. These are for-hire vessels that are like on Lake Minnetonka or whatever. If you're carrying more than six passengers, you need to have the inspection. So
that's what Scheid has on Lake Minnewawa. Vessel.
But that's a pontoon boat.
Oh,
that doesn't qualify.
It is a pontoon.
So, Mr. Chairman and members, like I said, this is a recodification. There's a couple provisions in here that I'm going to just kind of point you to real quick because it seems like it's a change in law, and actually it's not. Chapters 5 and 6, we're talking about a different way of inspecting and registering boilers in the state of Minnesota. And this matches what current practice is. And it deals with the issue of, companies that, hire an outfit to come in and inspect their boiler versus your insurance company who's going to come and inspect your boiler. Mr. Amato can talk more at length about this, but it's boring, one. But this bill.
Probably enough discussion.
It is. It is boring. We all know it is. See, I can kind of run off my mouth a little bit because I have a chief engineer's operating license, And once you get that, all you got to do is keep sending your money in, and then they got to give you your license. They got to have to renew your license.
Unless
so.
They lose the check.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Well,
I think there should be some continuing education. Send Murphy back to school for 20 hours a year. And
But Mr. Chairman, in all seriousness, members, the IBEW has looked at this. Several other unions that deal with boiler operators and inspections, things like that. And you know, there has been no known opposition to this bill. And like I say, the changes that are made here, you know, trying to get all the chapters that deal with boiler code kind of in one spot, and then cleaning up some of the old antiquated language that's in there to match what the normal practice is from day to day. And if you got any questions, we'll take them.
Is there any opposition to this legislation? Okay, Senator Perry, do you want to make the motion to approve this? This could be your re-election. Does it have to go to the finance, I suppose, huh? Is there something to do with
Mr. Money? No, Mr. Chairman, I don't think this needs to go to finance. You know, most of the boiler inspector, that's kind of a self-funded program.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Thomas, only did you... You don't need this, do you?
Late fee, but I don't know.
Chairman?
Senator Scheid.
Chairman, I'll bet you that Senator Moore would want it. The penalties are still in here.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, that's correct. Senator Moore did send out a note earlier on that anything that was doing with penalties she wanted to see, so we probably ought to send it over.
All right, I didn't get that.
We can send it to her committee. If she doesn't want to hear it, she can move it along by motion to the floor. So,
Senator Boniff?
Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, last year in the boiler legislation, there was something that related to schools. Is that still in this? The boiler operators.
That is actually in.
So it had to go to education. I remember we heard it.
You probably have 10 more stops to go there.
I didn't see it in the.
Last year's.
Right.
Okay. That's already taken care of.
Mr. Chairman, I think Senator Bonhoff is. Talking about the Section 7, I believe. Passed in a bill earlier in the week, we're being told. So
okay.
We can take it out of here if you want.
Yes, I am.
Otherwise, we'll just keep it in. Just keep it in until the other bill becomes law, and then
okay.
And we're copacetic. So.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni.
Senator Murphy, is this?
I'm looking.
Late fee, is that a new fee?
Why are we doing that? We shouldn't do that.
See, we're just striking that.
Leave it discretionary.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomasoni, there is no monetary fine on that. All they're doing is striking that as a gross misdemeanor.
What?
As a gross misdemeanor, they're striking the language.
Section 14. In the
section 14.
Oh, Section 14. You're looking at a different section here.
The summary says that it requires the commissioner to assess a late fee, and the current late fee is discretionary.
Mr. Chairman, yes, Senator Tomasoni, that was at one time at the discretion. Now we're just saying that if they're not paid in full by their due date, they get that $100 fee. The deal is that everybody in the industry knows when their due date is, and you know, sometimes there may be extenuating circumstances, but most of the time it's just people were negligent.
So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, it's not a new fee. It's just a different way of assessing the fee.
That's correct.
So I don't think I need to see it, Mr. Chairman, because it's not a new fee. but we'll have a discussion with Senator Cohen. In the meantime, you're going to Senator Moore's committee.
This, I don't. If she wants it, she can have it. But I don't think some of these things we don't have to go to. I don't think six committees to pass a new boiler license. Senator Perry, what's her committee? What's it called? Judiciary?
Judiciary.
What was it? Senate File 2726. He recommended to pass and forward it to the Judiciary Committee. Further discussion on that? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome.
Here we go. That's.
Great job. Licensing provisions and fees modification. Senator Sparks, Senator 2510.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity to present Senate File 2510. Before we get going too far, Mr. Chair, I do have an author's amendment, the A10-2217 amendment that would put the bill in the shape the author prefers.
We have that in our.
Mr. Chair, it deletes a section 24 out of the bill, and then renumbers the other sections of the bill.
Okay.
That's from the last.
Well, we had two of these things up here. What, A10 and?
The 2117 amendment.
Oh. That three numbers. Okay, all in favor of the Sparks motion, signify by saying aye.
Oh, aye.
And the eighth, the 2160, what's that? Is it? So you're
that's one we might deal with later, Mr. Chair.
All right. We're on the bill so far as amended, Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a bill that was brought to me by the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry. I had a nice meeting with Commissioner Swigum and Assistant Commissioner Joe Wakeham earlier this year. The purpose of the bill is to provide better equity, transparency, and accountability to license and improve efficiency and cost controls. And I'm going to turn it over to Commissioner Swigum to talk a little bit more about the details and the work that went into this, and then Assistant Commissioner Joe Wakeham is here also to walk you through the bill.
Mr. Swigum, welcome to the committee.
Chairman Benson and members, thank you very much, and thank you to Senator Sparks for carrying this piece of legislation for us. It's a good bill, Mr. Chairman and members, and it does exactly what state government should do. Let me lay out the goals of the bill, and let me quickly try to get to the consequences of the legislation, because we will be very transparent about how we lay it out to you, because when you deal with fees can be very controversial. Fees can be very political, as you all know, when you head into November elections. So I want you to be very, very comfortable with this fee bill that is before you. Mr. Chairman, Senator Sparks began with the word transparent. This bill will be very, very transparent to all of our stakeholders at the department. We issue 108,000 licenses a year. 108,000 licenses that range from your contractors to your plumbers to your electricians to your high-pressure pipers. 108,000 licenses that could be affected or changed by this. We have had numerous outreach meetings with each and every stakeholder, with stakeholder groups, to explain this bill, to explain the changes, the reasons why, and what is involved with each group as far as the consequence of the license fee change, the restructuring that you have before you. The bill is very reflective and respective of current statute and what we should be doing in state government. When we issue a license, that license, the cost of that license, the fee for that license should be respective of the time it takes our department to go through the issuing of the license, whether that's collecting the fee money, whether it's the secretarial work, whether it's the money that is necessary for continuing education, or the money that might be necessary for a board, such as the electricity has their own board, the authoritative board. It should be reflective and respective of the costs that are involved for that license. And then thirdly, it brings an efficiency to our department, Mr. Chairman, where we will be able to now have units, some persons within our department, maybe move from one unit to another with much more uniformity than has taken place in the past. In the past, we've always had different fees, different late penalties, different assessments coming from different units. When CCLD was combined 4 years ago at the Department of Labor, it is efficient to bring everything together. Mr. Chairman, right now we have fees at the Department of Labor that range from $0 to $450. With no rhyme or reason to the zero or the $450. So this bill will bring together a rhyme or a reason and certainly a pathway and understanding of why the fee is what it is.
Mr. Smigham, you've been working on this for quite a while, haven't you? And you've had all the stakeholders involved in meetings.
We've had, Mr. Chairman,
didn't
we
just drop out of the sky. I mean, you've been looking at this for a couple of years now, or a year.
A better part of a year.
Yeah.
The better part of a year, Mr. Chairman. We did come in, obviously, to your office.
Yeah, we talked about it.
And yeah, I think we went to Mr. Tomasoni's office and let him know about it as well. One of our staff persons in our financial area has spent the better part of his year. That's Mr. Ed Potter in the back here, the better part of his year, getting the information, the facts, bringing things together in an efficient way. Mr. Chairman, I want to be very, very upfront with you from the standpoint of fees. The department, one of my directions to the folks in charge of bringing this bill together was that we would not increase the total value of any fees to the department. This is not a fee grab for the Department of Labor and Industry. We right now raise approximately $5 million in fees. After Senator Sparks' bill hopefully passes, we will still raise $5 million. There is no increase in the burden of taxpayers, our stakeholders in the state, in regards to the fees that they are will be assessed. Now, there will be some changes amongst individual fees, respective of the time it takes us to issue the fee. Approximately, Mr. Chairman, 50% of our stakeholders will see their fees go down. Approximately 37% will see their fees increase.
That's this graph here. That
there is
next
we
time
have a
we'll
sheet there
we'll
for
number
you.
The sheet so we know. not about page.
Probably about the fourth
five or
page
six.
In. And approximately 13% of our stakeholders, licensees, will see their
50%
fees.
50% decrease and 37% increase, but not. Maximum increase is $57. Maximum decrease is $366.
And, Mr. Chairman, some of the fee increases and decreases will be $1, as some of them will be $5. But, again, it's respective of the time it takes the department staff to issue the fee and do the verification of the continuing education and the bonds required and whatever. So, Mr. Chairman, we feel that this bill will also help the department significantly in the efficiency in which we're able to bring forward to our stakeholders not only the service we provide, but the personnel, the number of FTEs. As we get pushed, as every other department gets pushed, to do more with less, we try to do more with less members, and this will help us do that. So, Mr. Sparks, thank you for carrying the bill, and we would stand available for any questions. And we do have Assistant Commissioner Joachim here to go through the specifics of the bill, if you would be interested. And I think, Mr. Chairman, in the sheets you have before you is almost every license, which every license shows either the increase or decrease and what percent are being increased or decreased.
Well, we need to go. They got plumbing, water, conditioning. You list them all in our... I think the business community and the labor community would have to be on board for this kind of stuff. They know right where they're at. And
yep. It's very transparent. Mr. Chairman, we have received very favorable responses from all the stakeholders that we've gone to, whether they be labor or business interests, contractors, you name it. Mr. Joachim, Assistant Commissioner Joachim, has spent a significant amount of his time this fall making sure he's reaching out to every stakeholder interest group that we have. Manufactured housing that was just here in the previous bill, that would be one of our licensees that we reached out to.
Mr. Joachim, just a few words on the process, and if everybody you believe is on board.
Mr. Chair,
Commissioner Joachim said that, but I'd like you.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Tom Joachim, Assistant Commissioner. Just to add a couple more bits of information, the 108,000 licenses we issue were in 16 categories before, and again from 0 to 450. We narrowed it down to four categories. We have an entry-level position, a journeyman-level position, a master-level position, and a business license. So all the business licenses are the same. If I was a construction firm such as Krauss Anderson and I have high-pressure piping and electrical and mechanical and plumbing and people working for me, their licenses are all different. Why should an individual license be different, and why should my contractor license be different from 450 in high-pressure piping down to 100 in electrical? Why should that be? So this is what we looked at to try and even this up, to bring them into balance. And then the only other thing that I think is major in the bill, other than the conversions of the fees into this chart that we have on the first page of the summary, is that we took in high-pressure piping, electrical, and other business licenses we have, except for plumbing, we all had a business license. The plumbing industry was the only one that did not have a business license, so we matched up the plumbing categories to the electrical and high-pressure piping so that any person could own a plumbing business provided they have a master plumber of record working for them. Prior to that, only the master plumber could be the contractor. So this would allow anybody to open a plumbing business provided they have a master plumber of record doing their plumbing work for them. So we matched up the plumbing businesses with all the rest of the business licenses we have. So that's probably the major change in the rest of the bill.
Just a few less hoops and loops and stuff, I suppose.
Yes.
That people have to go through, and that's part of our assignment. I think on this committee it's not, maybe it sounds major, but it probably is a big deal for these people that have to go through all of these.
Mr. Chairman.
Different. Senator Tomasoni.
Chairman, this must be going to finance, I would think, after here. But I don't know if this is for Mr. Joachim or the commissioner or both. Section 50 of the bill on page 39, what kind of boat license is this?
Mr. Chair, Senator, years ago, the boats for hire in Minnesota, most of them had a boiler in the boat. And so because labor and industry did the boiler inspections, we did the boat inspections at the same time. There's only one boat left in Minnesota that has a boiler that operates on Lake Minnetonka. However, we continue to inspect boats that are for hire. And it applies to any boat that's over 21 feet that is used for hire. So a guide that has a 22-foot boat and takes four or five people out, we do inspect those boats to make sure they're functioning, that the hull is correct and there isn't any holes in it and works properly. And I've been in conversation with the Department of Natural Resources about should this actually be with the Department of Labor and Industry anymore, and we just look at the one boat that has a boiler, or where should this be for the licensing of these boats. We're in conversations right now, don't know what's going to happen with that, but if we come up with some ideas about where it would fit more functionally, we will come back to the legislature and propose that change.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Joachim, so Senator Shy doesn't have to have a master's license for driving her pontoon boat then? Is that
Mr. Chair, Senator, not unless she's hiring out to guide
Chairman,
a bunch of people in a boat over 21 feet.
She's got a yacht with two servants.
And Mr. Chairman, how does it fit in with Senator Murphy's bill that was just in front of us?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, we included all of the licenses categories we have into this bill to update the licenses. So Senator Murphy's bill, whatever is current language in the boiler operator bill is in Senator Murphy's bill. This would modify that language to bring the boiler operator licenses in line with our new categories here.
key word is for higher.
For higher. And over 21 feet, Senator.
Well, Mr. Senator Chairman. Murphy just deleted that language in his bill. Over 21 feet.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sparky.
And Senator Tomasoni is on to something. We do have an amendment that's not quite ready to go yet. But this bill will go to Senator Tomasoni's committee, and hopefully we can address it that. But we do will have an amendment that was trying to match the language that just moved out of here in Senator Murphy's committee.
As Senator Murphy's bill says is carrying more than six passengers for hire, but then deletes and is 21 feet or more in length. Well, I don't know if you got to get together with him and figure out what's the right thing
Mr.
to do.
Mr. Chair, Senator, we'll correct that and bring it to your committee and make sure we have the right match-up language.
All right. Got a pretty darn good watchdog today there.
I want to make sure that I don't have to have a master license to drive my boat.
Mr. Chairman?
You know, you're reading the bills today. Senator Schein.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question. This kind of... this chart that says proposed license fee structure continues and annual fee renewal amounts, is that consistent then for every one of your occupations? And can you tell me, is the initial license more expensive than the renewal generally? Or I just couldn't tell from this.
Mr. Chair, Senator. And I'm not sure. Did you get the summary form?
Same sheet.
Okay.
This one here.
Okay. If you look on the, we have four categories. There's a base, and then a renewal fee, and the base fee is the same as the renewal fee.
Oh, that's.
And then there's an exam fee, and what we tried to do is break it down. We had some exam fees had. Some license fees had exam fees in them, some had continuing education in them, and we said it isn't fair to charge the same for everybody if you don't have continuing education or you don't have to take an exam. So we tried to break it out into the categories that if you have all of them, you're going to pay more. If you're not, you're going to pay less.
I understand. Thank you. No, this is much. This
no,
makes
I
a lot of sense.
Mr. Chairman, to the Senator's question,
yeah,
it will be consistent amongst the various license stakeholders we do have.
That's good. Chairman, I commend you for doing.
Yeah, they're good.
Makes a lot of sense.
Senator Carlson.
I agree. This makes a lot of sense, Mr. Chair. But I have a question for the Commissioner. About three-quarters of the way in, there is residential builder, roofer, remodeler licenses. And it brings up a thought to my mind. I like it that you're using the criteria of how long it takes to prepare a license to, and that's keyed to the cost of the license. But I'm aware that you do a lot of investigations and enforcement. And in this particular area of builder, roofer, remodelers, are you also offsetting the costs of enforcement?
It includes enforcement, but...
No. Mr. Jacob? Senator, yes, our license fees, and I'll get my chart out here, cover the licensing process, enforcement actions, exam development and testing, qualification verification, work experience, bonds and insurance, and then administrative costs for our legal services. So it covers the whole gamut of
all inclusive. I think they've got everything now in there. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You can see. You didn't know that, did you?
Looking over here. Stay on top of things, Tom. Commissioner, I was just wondering if you, if any of these funds that are holding the fees, are they on the governor's proposal to be included into the general fund?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rosen, they are not.
Okay. You maybe mentioned that already, but
no.
No, that's a good question.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rosen, the... the governor's recommended.
See, this is kind of one of the first times that I swing a mate. You haven't been able to.
Excuse me, cheerleading
or something? You're lost. You're not lost for words. You're not coming out.
Senator Rosen, the governor's budget, which
was refereed
another day. Yeah, I've been yelling at too many sixth grade kids, I think, maybe. Senator Rosen, the governor's budget affects the Department of Labor and Industry to the tune of $16,000 in our general fund, but does leave the rest of our special funds and special accounts whole, at least whole as compared to last year's budget.
You know, you're going to have a tough time at the Lincoln Reagan party tomorrow night when you have to give a talk, accept your award.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is that tomorrow night?
Thank you for coming.
We're not going that far. I just announced that you're getting the award. That doesn't mean I'm going to go to it. But it's a big deal, I would imagine.
Mr. Chair, what's the award for? The award?
Yeah.
What is it? Yes, what is it?
Maybe you could tell the group. It's a Lincoln Reagan. That's what I know over at the...
Mr. Chairman, with the two parties we have in Minnesota, the one party has a Lincoln Reagan Day dinner that is kind of a fundraiser to raise monies. And... at this fundraiser, they chose to recognize myself as a recipient of an award this year.
That's a big deal.
Good
Congratulations.
Service award.
That's very deserving.
Chairman, I thought maybe it was an award for somebody who's been around the legislature as long as Lincoln and Reagan.
5 years been around.
Oh, he was later than Lincoln. Even, I don't know, you were a little later than I was. We had a... Smigum and I had the Battle of the Waymasters for about 20, seemed like 25 years, but remember that? You had some Brota, was it some Brota?
I was predicting in the early 80s, Mr.
Yeah,
Chairman.
That's right. That's when Speaker Seaman put me on about five conference committees because of that issue. I don't know if you knew that, but I was on the Ag Conference Committee, and I do know what a cow looks like, but that's about the extent of it. to protect the Waymasters.
Mr. Chairman, a good boy from South St. Paul ought to know what a cow looks
like. I do. I do know the difference. Well, let's move this bill on any further. I think it makes a lot of sense, so good work, you guys.
Mr. Chair, then I would move that Senate File 2510 as amended be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Economic Development and Housing Budget Division.
Okay, on that Sparks motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, motion prevails. Thank you again. This is...
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr.
Chairman. Thank you.
Yeah. Somebody ask it. Committee's adjourned.
Oh, David.
David.
Good. Go ahead.